You know, Luke's gospel tells us that before the events of Holy Week, that Jesus determined to go to Jerusalem. You know, deciding to follow Jesus is the greatest decision that you will ever make. But after deciding to follow Jesus, the next great decision that you need to make is to determine to become more like him in every way. Determining to become like Jesus day by day changes everything. And Jerusalem is the city of peace. That's what it means. And if you didn't know anything about history, kings would ride into cities. And when they rode into a city, if they rode in on a horse, it meant that they were there for war. But if they rode in on a donkey, it meant that they were coming in peace. So I want you to get the picture of Palm Sunday, that the Prince of Peace enters the city of peace riding on a donkey. But I also want you to understand that in a lot of ways, war is very easy and peacemaking is very costly. Jesus enters this city as the King of Peace. And you know what he does? He weeps. He weeps over the city because it's not going to recognize who he is, because it's enthralled with all the other kingdoms of this world. And here's what I want you to know on this Palm Sunday, that if you have anybody in your life that currently is rejecting Jesus, you never have to wonder his response to their rejection. It breaks his heart, he weeps. By Thursday, he shares a last supper with his disciples. He washes their feet, which some incorrectly view as he changes his posture. But if you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, what you discover is that Jesus washing their feet isn't a change of posture. It's a continuation of the only one he's ever had. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And then it says to give his life as a ransom for many. So he washes their feet. And if you read this text as we prepare our hearts for Holy Week, and as you do, if you ever wanted to go to easter.lifecenter.church, we have a download there that walks through everything that happens this week, which is significant, and how it fulfills prophecy. But again, Jesus shares a last supper with his disciples. He washes their feet. If you read the text, Satan is literally in the room. Jesus knows it, but the disciples don't. He tells Judas that he's going to betray him, and then he takes his disciples to a garden. And this is really significant because the purpose of Easter, the reason of Easter, the why of Easter first happened in a garden a long time ago. At the foot of the Mount of Olives, there is this garden called Gethsemane, and it's named for its olive groves. Extracting oil from olives involves crushing and pressing. And Jesus is about to be crushed and pressed. He knows it. The disciples are also about to be crushed and pressed, but they're unaware. How many of you know that in the crushing, in the pressing, God's heart is to create new wine in us? But sometimes in the crushing and the pressing, what's first got to come out is the stuff that shouldn't be there. And so Easter brings humanity to see the most unjust event on earth that ever took place. And the one it happens to does everything voluntarily. And in doing so, redefines love, but also our understanding of God. You know, proximity to Jesus is always closeness to truth. And truth is something that darkness always attacks because it always opposes truth. How many know that truth sets us free? But sometimes it first stings. And it says, and when they had sung a hymn, the disciples sang just like we sang today. When they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, to Gethsemane. And then Jesus said to them, here comes truth. you will all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But, everyone just whisper, but, after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee. You know, sin is the disease. We've all fallen short. Sin is the disease. Everyone in that garden, except for one, has fallen short. But self-focus is the symptom. It's not the disease, it's the symptom of it. Jesus says they've already fallen short, but because they've fallen short, now they're gonna fall away. And this is where Luke's gospel, as I mentioned just a moment ago, comes into a sharper focus. Because Jesus said the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The word ransom implies something else has ownership of us. And truth now confronts in this moment. We now see the wrestle of this in the garden. In Gethsemane, Jesus speaks whole truth. You're all gonna fall away, and after I'm raised up, I'll meet you in Galilee. I would actually wanna be more interested in the after you're raised up part, I'll meet you in Galilee. That's good news, but B, what do you mean by that? But isn't it interesting that when truth comes and it hits our hearts in a way that we don't believe, we don't hear whole truth, we just hear the part we don't like. And Peter can't receive whole truth because it offends the lie he believes about himself is true. Peter literally gets into an argument with truth. If that doesn't show us as humanity, I don't know what does. Anybody here in your life ever been standing in truth, trying to talk to somebody about someone who can't see it? Don't raise your hand, don't nudge them, that's mean. This is Easter. They're in Gethsemane, and when we're pressed, what's in us comes out. And Peter answered him, though they all fall away because of you, how to win friends and influence people. These jerks, they may do it. Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Aren't you glad that Jesus loves you enough to tell you the truth? He looks at him and he says, truly, I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, not once, not twice, three times, you're gonna deny me. And Peter said to him, he doubles down. Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you. Watch, 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 watch. Now who do the disciples follow, truth or error? They follow Peter. And all the disciples said the same. The disciples are with Jesus in this moment, they follow Peter. This is a warning for all of us that Christians who are not yet like Jesus can sometimes influence us away from God's word. They follow Peter. They're all responsible for their own decisions. But they also need to steward their influence. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And taking with him Peter and his two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to the point, even to death. Would you just remain here and watch with me? So Jesus asks something very specific of them. And going a little farther, he fell on his face and he prayed saying, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. It is an amazing thing to decide to follow Jesus. It is an incredible thing to determine to become more like Jesus. And in between your decision and your determination must come a surrender of your will to the Father's will. This is what we see. Jesus is beginning to feel the pressing. He knows the crushing that is coming. And in need, he asks his closest disciples to be on, just to be attentive and to be on guard. And there's one little note that I want to pull out here, and I think it's really powerful, especially if you struggle with perfectionism. And it is this: being sinless does not mean you don't have genuine needs. Jesus is sinless, and in this moment, he brings his friends, and he's like, I just need you to be with me. The more you become like Jesus doesn't mean that you're not going to need people. That's a lie from the pit of hell to isolate you. You can be without sin and still in great need. Turn the person beside you and say, I need you. Just not right now. Jesus asks. Jesus specifically asks them for something. And again, they fall short. And I want to reiterate, their falling away is a symptom. The disease is their fallenness in falling short. It's the sin of their lives. Again, they choose self over obedience. And now I want to give you five words. As on this Palm Sunday, we prepare our hearts for this entire week. I want you to understand Easter with these five words. They frame not only our Easter at Life Center, but Easter itself. It's the core of the gospel, which is the five words are, we can't, but Jesus can. And if you don't get that in your soul, you won't understand Easter. That we can't. That if we could, we would. But the problem is we can't. Everything that we have done just today from the first song when you came in leads us to this moment that we can't. We cannot. If we could, again, then Jesus wouldn't need to come. We've just completed season 8 of Becoming Heartstrong. Do you know the defining metaphor over season 8 is they can't, they can't, they can't, they can't, they can't. But God is faithful. Easter is we can't, but Jesus can. And he came to the disciples and he found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, so remember this in the context. Like you just said, even if they all fall away, you just said that I will die with you and you can't even pray with me. So could you not watch with me for 1 hour? And he says, watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak. Again, for a second time, he went away and he prayed, my Father, if this cannot pass until I drink it, your will be done. In the pressing, in the crushing, it is on. And again, he came and he found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and he prayed for the third time, saying the same words again. And then he came to his disciples and said to them, sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. And then they look and see one of their friends. You see, Jesus is strong because his flesh is dead. The disciples' flesh, sometimes like ours, is really strong because it's not yet dead. I want to frame it in this way. It's the day of the exam, and the disciples don't even know the test has started. And I find life is cruel like that sometimes. That you enter into something and you didn't have it on your calendar. But all of a sudden, something is being tested and you didn't even know it was here. How many of you know that in God, preparation time is never wasted time? And just as he said, Judas betrays Jesus with a kiss, an act of friendship, of intimacy. And Jesus is taken into custody.
I never do well at this part. Because Jesus looks at Judas and he says, friend. I would have other names going through my head. Because the flesh is strong in this one. Friend, do what you have come to do. So then they came up and they laid hands on Jesus. I want you to pause. I want you to think about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and all the ways Jesus lays hands on people and what happens. Well, what happens when we try to lay hands on him? And they seize him. And behold, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. And I love how Luke tells the story. In this moment, in the crushing, in the pressing, what's in them comes out. They can get angry. They can fight back. They can try to overcome injustice in their own strength. And I want you to see this. What did Jesus ask them to do? He asked them to pray, not to fight. He asked them to pray, not to fight. My heart is burdened for Christians who love to fight but don't know how to pray. Jesus asked them to pray, not to fight. So in other words, and I just feel like this is the story of my life so much. What Jesus asks them to do, they don't do. And then what he doesn't ask them to do, they do with vim and vigor. But I want to remind you that Easter is not the story of we can and Jesus watches. Easter is the story of we can't, but Jesus can. Easter is not what we accomplish. It is what Jesus alone can finish. See, earlier you may have thought I was speaking hyperbolically when describing the death of Jesus as the most unjust event on earth, but I wasn't using hyperbole, I was speaking factually. Because here's what is true of me and here's what is true of you. I may be innocent of a specific sin. I may be not guilty of a particular crime. But when it comes to contributing to the fallenness of this world, as Pastor Lori said a moment ago, I am guilty. Like, I'm not innocent in the brokenness of this world. I contribute to it. God in his justice, every time I choose sin, I am a traitor to God. I'm guilty. I'm not innocent. You know, again, like I may not have hit your car, but in the grand scheme of fallenness, I am guilty. Everybody else in humanity is guilty of the same, except one. So again, I'm not speaking hyperbolically, I'm speaking factually. Jesus is sinless. And so not only is he innocent of the crimes that we are going to read that he is charged with this week, but he is innocent in the most truthful definition of the word, in a way that none of us can say with honesty and sincerity and truth that we're innocent. You know, on Good Friday, when we gather at 9 or 11, we're going to read and we're going to hear Jesus say, "It is finished." Finished means that the ransom has been paid, because it's what he came to do, not to be served, but to serve and to seek and save those who were lost and to give his life as a ransom for many. So that finished part is the ransom is paid. But I wonder if you understand the "it" part. Of the "it" is finished. What is it? You know, in Gethsemane, we see this beautiful picture of the early disciples, the first disciples, that they don't get it. The kingdom that Jesus is bringing, not a kingdom of harm, it's a kingdom of healing. What is occurring is unjust, but Jesus is not a victim. he's doing this voluntarily. Hebrews says that Jesus said, nobody takes my life from me, I lay it down. How many of you be honest sometimes that in the it of life, we don't get it? And when those who were around him saw and what would follow, they said, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, just a different way to tell the story, and cut off his right ear. But Jesus said, no more of this. And he touched his ear and he healed him. Come on. Come on. The most unjust event is taking place. And I want you to see Jesus is fully in control. He's got it because he's submitted to the Father. The things of this world cannot touch him, though they will harm him. They have no control over him. All hail, King Jesus. I want you to see one of his disciples stretches out his arms and it harms, but the story of Easter is that now Jesus is going to stretch out his arms, not to harm us, but to heal us, to pay our ransom, to restore our relationship with the Father. Jesus stretches out his arms to heal, as the old pastor expression goes, when anybody says, how much does God love you? You look at the cross and you say, this much. Three words. Jesus gets it. He gets all of it. And now let me say it, maybe you hear it differently. For me to go free and for you to go free, he's going to get it. He's going to get all of it. And not just the physicality of it, the sin and the shame. He's going to take that too. A quick story and we close. Last year, I had the privilege of meeting with somebody in the city who has got some power. And they asked me to open in prayer. And we did. And then it was sort of like, great, now that that's out of the way, the meeting of the big stuff can now happen. And in the moment, I didn't say anything, but it struck in my head, you think the kingdom of this world is more powerful than the kingdom that we just prayed of? Like some walk into church and they're like, okay, now church is done. Now I'm going to get on with my life. You don't get it. And I'm not saying the church is the kingdom because the kingdom's big. But what I am saying is the kingdoms of this world will not be the final king or kingdoms that reign. So care about them, but they're not worthy of your worship. Don't give it to them. There is only one. All hail King Jesus. You know, some Christians, they incorrectly see the cross as defeat and the empty tomb as victory, but the Bible doesn't. The Bible sees the cross as victory and the empty tomb is the announcement. Sort of like when your kid wins the championship and then the trophy's handed out. They're the same event. The game is won. Here's the recognition. It is finished. It's not defeat. It is not darkness winning. It is King Jesus reigning. All of darkness knew in that moment, uh-oh. Don't believe me. The earth knows what took place in that moment. And it shows. You see, Philip Schaff, trying to describe King Jesus to society, helping them to get it, says these words. Jesus of Nazareth, without money and arms, conquered more millions than Alexander the Great, Caesar, Muhammad, and Napoleon. Without science and learning, he shed more light on things human and divine than all philosophers and scholars combined. Without the eloquence of school, he spoke such words of life as were never spoken before or since, and produced effects which lie beyond the reach of orator or poet. Without writing a single line, he set more pens in motion and furnished themes for more sermons, orations, discussions, learned volumes, works of art, and songs of praise than the whole army of great men of ancient and modern times. All hail King Jesus. Loved ones, Easter is a story that we can't, but Jesus can. Can, you might ask, I would describe this way. In Jesus alone, our sin is atoned, our debt is canceled because Jesus paid it. God's justice is met, his truth is established because Jesus satisfied it. We don't earn God's love, we receive it because Jesus provided it. The old system is over, no more sacrifices because Jesus fulfilled it. We are reconciled to God, the relationship is restored because Jesus bridged it. Jesus finished his mission, he did exactly what he determined to do, he accomplished it. Perfect. That wasn't a trick question there. You're right with me. It's good. And this is what I love. Jesus won. Evil is defeated. Darkness lost. God did it. God did it. God did it. And he made the devil watch it. See, if I was a real pastor, I would have had an organ and that would have been a moment. But I am not that guy. In the first garden called Eden, we learned that humanity couldn't do it. In Gethsemane, we see that Peter and the disciples also couldn't do it. But as we go into Holy Week, remember, Easter isn't the story of what we can do. It isn't we can, it's we can't. But Jesus finished all of it. And so I would like to invite us to stand. And we don't have palm branches today. Turn the person beside you and say, boo. But y'all got two palms. Oh, I didn't think that was... That's not really that clever. Stay right there. But in this, since we've had you come into the service and kind of pick up and hold, and now we're going to have us all lay down, I'm going to lead us in prayer. It's going to come on the screen behind me. I just want you to hold your palms open. I want you to just picture in your hands everything that you can't. I want you to exchange it, lay it at his feet for the sufficiency of everything that he did. And there it is. Let's read together. Let's all pray together. Let's say, Jesus, today we lay down all that we are and all that we have, just like the crowd on that road. We place it before you in worship. Everything we have, everything we are, we lay it down. It's yours. You alone are worthy of our praise. We confess that we fall short, but we receive your mercy new every morning. Great is your faithfulness to us. Teach us to take what we have, who we are, and even what we've done, and lay it at your feet without hesitation. We don't want anything more than you. Hosanna in the highest. In Jesus' holy name, amen. Hey church, we can't, but Jesus can. All hail King Jesus.